A Brighter Path, written by Snowy Egret and read by Litra. A Star Wars All Media Types fanfic with the pairing Jango Fett, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Rated teen. Summary. Ben Kenobi shares his afterlife with the ghost of Jango Fett, observing the living and their shenanigans. When they get a chance to fix things together, they return to the day they met and immediately begin to mess with Palpatine's plans. The clones are very confused. Boba is not happy, and Obi-Wan is delighted to have a body again.
His armor could use fresh paint. I know. It's almost as if his father did not explain how to care for it properly. I know.
Dear, if you frown any harder, you'll be as wrinkled as me in no time.
What did I miss? Did you tell them they're siblings?
I may have set that aside for later.
You should really do your ghost thing and tell Luke. Now.
Is there a reason for the urgency?
The princess kissed him, old man. Look at his face. He's so smug.
Oh, dear.
Why did he have to get involved with Jabba?
Why is Jabba your primary concern when Boba has been working for Vader for so long?
Jabba isn't much better. We're only lucky he doesn't have Vader's power. The only acceptable reason to be in that place is to take the throne.
I'm quite sure Boba has no interest in that. Oh, Luke, that is not a proper lightsaber form.
He doesn't need fancy forms if it works. Now shut up. I'm watching my son.
Now, that cannon is uncivilized.
It does the job. The princess is everything a Mandalorian should be.
So you've said, multiple times.
No disapproving Jedi glare for her rash actions?
Some people are only good for a pyre, and I'm afraid Jabba's demise was long overdue. What is Boba doing?
Oh, Bobica, why?
He's taking a page out of his father's book, isn't he?
Ah, Boba, watch out! Great, just great. A Sarlacc.
Her poncho looks quite similar to the one she wore when she convinced me to buy her gloves on Deu.
You lived in a cave with barely enough to feed yourself, and you spent your only credits on gloves she didn't need because she made puppy eyes at you?
You would have done the same for Boba.
Not if I was trying to run away.
Leia's arguments were sound.
I'm sure. So, hypothetically, if Luke is right, are we at risk of sharing this space with Vader when he dies?
If it is the will of the Force.
Well, if you throw rocks at him again, warn me first.
I would do no such thing.
What, you'll forgive and forget? Is that a Jedi thing? He says sorry and it erases everything he did?
Jedi do not hold grudges, my friend, as you must have realized by now. After all, I did not attempt to find a way to smother your charming spirit yet.
That doesn't answer the question.
There is no redemption path that can make up for what he did. Only a long road where every step will be a struggle to remain in the light and show kindness and remorse.
Don't know why I asked. You'd welcome him here.
I would welcome my long-lost brother with the understanding that he has gained full awareness of his crimes, as I accepted you once. Yes.
What was it you said about some people only being good for a pyre?
If Vader gives Luke to the Emperor, or kills him, he will be just that. I am a Jedi, not a fool.
Well, there you go, Kenobi. He did it and died. How was he supposed to redeem himself without, what was it, a long road to remain in the light?
If it had been anyone else, he wouldn't have killed the fossil.
He only betrayed Palpatine because it was Luke being tortured, and it took so long that Luke will have nerve damage for the rest of his life. It's too easy.
Absolve him. It does not. But hold on to anger, we shall not.
Master Yoda, where have you been?
Guiding little Grogu, I was.
What are you supposed to be?
Insolent you are, Jango Fett. Grandmaster of the Order, I was. Yes. My species, a secret, it remains. And a message I bring. From the depths of the Force.
Great. If you'll excuse me, I need to check if Boba is still in the Sarlacc.
Stay, you must. Concern you, it does. Travel back in time, both of you will. Change things, yes. Protect and prevent. Fix.
We'd erase our own past and forget about it. Wouldn't we, Master?
Your leg my stick can hit no longer, young Kenobi. But sense it, you should. Limits, do you see, in the Force? Narrow, think the path is, do you? Many possibilities, yes. Many universes. Unchanged, this one will be. Brighter, perhaps. Another could become. Go, you will. Alone you will not be. And, maybe, a surprise, yes, or two, or three.
And so they go. Ben?
No, Obi-Wan, and won't that take some time getting used to?
Awakens in wet clothes.
Thick locks of hair plastered to his head and shoes squeaking on the white floor of Jango's apartment. He blinks against the harsh lighting and represses a shudder at the cold air. Jango blinks and his mouth twists.
I don't know what your Force is doing, but this is not an ideal day to return to.
Obi-Wan doesn't reply. He's too busy marveling at the fact that he can sense his friends and family. That the galaxy is bathed in more light than he ever remembered. And that he has a body again. It's a good thing he wasn't walking when his spirit was shoved into his younger envelope. He would have fallen on his face. As it is, he is standing up by sheer force of will. He grips the nearby kitchen counter, just in case.
You're dripping water everywhere.
And you, my dear, are being quite rude to your esteemed guest, which happens to be me.
Jango's glare never intimidated Obi-Wan, and it certainly doesn't today. The man stomps over to the cupboard, unsteady on his feet, and prepares tea with a completely unnecessary series of violent gestures. Obi-Wan sheds his outer layers, leaving them on the floor, and sits, uninvited. Because he criffing deserves it. Jango kicks the robe out of the way and joins him on the couch. A very firm couch. Obi-Wan frowns and wiggles.
Where do we start? Jango asks.
His tea, with a splash of fragrant alcohol, remains untouched. A wise move. Obi-Wan burns his tongue in his haste to drink it and remembers to let his cup cool down. He also forgets to answer Jango's question. Jango cocks an eyebrow and elbows him.
If you space out every time we talk, we'll still be on this couch when the Battle of Geonosis is over.
Pardon the momentary distraction.
Obi-Wan glances at the raging seas through the window and stretches his senses, slowly, like a muscle he hasn't used in far too long. After being one with the Force, this is all a bit jarring. What required no effort anymore must now be reached for, and yet it comes with an ease he is certain he didn't experience in his past life. He senses Boba in the next room, still grumpy, but focused on something more interesting than his dad's visitor. 17. Steady and a little bored. Cody, darling Cody, is a calculating yet mischievous speck in an ocean of inquisitive minds, all eager, anxious, likely spreading tales of the soaked Jedi gracing the halls of Topeka City, and what his presence means. He doesn't venture further, his throat too tight with the sudden realization that those men, all so beloved, are not yet the friends he knew. Force willing, he'll spare them the pain of war and the horrors that followed. He skirts around the clones' presences and seeks the only light he's wary of, much further away, yet somehow closer in the tapestry of his mind. When he finds it, he briefly closes his eyes and his shoulders drop. Shadows are already smothering his Padawan, and the young man embraces them, clings to them. These aren't the tendrils of his usual anger and the clouds of Palpatine's poison, but the evil of a choice he already made with no outside influence and would make again if given the chance. He reopens his eyes and watches his reflection in his teacup. Jango kicks his shin. Obi-Wan sighs.
Anakin's first fall already happened, he explains. It hurts, of course. It always will. But Obi-Wan has decades to understand he wasn't to blame.
Sith hells, Vader himself told him so.
Obi-Wan has made peace with the past, and being thrown back here is, luckily, not changing that.
If he is to be steered away from his fate, he continues, and the Force encourages him. It seems it isn't by preventing these events. Perhaps Anakin must learn right from wrong, atone, and walk the path to redemption of his own free will.
Obi-Wan is more than happy to let him learn and grow. He only wishes it wasn't at the cost of so many lives.
You're not supposed to be Skywalker's moral compass. And don't look at me like that. I know you know that now. What's our plan? Geonosis won't happen if you don't go, and we need to move fast.
He's not really asking Obi-Wan, because his face is doing the intensity thing that is so very Jango. And he stands up and starts pacing like he did as a ghost. Jango is a man of action, and Obi-Wan can tell it is greatly irritating to talk about things instead of jumping in blindly. But Jango is also a leader, and ideas must be rushing through his head.
Good. He can plan against the more immediate threat.
Obi-Wan has a crisis to prevent, and...
oh, Force.
A wedding that cannot be allowed to happen. Jango stops. Rubs the back of his neck, says,
if the Sith has no army, it'll buy us some time.
And sits back down, grabbing a datapad. Obi-Wan hums in agreement. He finds his comm unit on his belt and dials Quinlan's code. Jango doesn't react. He seems fascinated by whatever he's doing on his pad, but Obi-Wan hasn't lost his mind yet, and he doesn't peek over his shoulder. Quinlan, however, sounds both annoyed and out of breath, and Obi-Wan's lips stretch to a wide smile.
Hello there.
What do you want?
Oh, how Obi-Wan missed him.
Quinlan, dear heart,
I require your assistance.
I'm busy!
Whoever shares your bed at this moment will have to wait. Blasterfire cuts off Quinlan's reply.
Oh, my apologies,
Obi-Wan adds cheerfully, unwilling to dampen the happiness spreading through his limbs at this first contact with his old friend. The wonder is sweet and tastes like hope and relief, like that time on Mapuzo when he realized Quinlan had survived.
I misread the situation.
The sound of a lightsaber follows. Quinlan grunts and swears, and finally, silence.
Are you done?
Obi-Wan asks his best friend.
Maybe.
Fantastic. Would you happen to be in the Arcanus sector? If Obi-Wan's memory is intact, Quinlan is lurking around Savarine at the moment.
A couple of parsecs away. Why?
My Padawan fell.
Quinlan is too far away, so Obi-Wan doesn't pick up on his emotions. But his sharp intake of air is a good tell. Obi-Wan realizes he should perhaps control his voice better, or at least appear somewhat shocked. But he's past caring.
He got better, he adds, which won't help.
But we can't ignore it. Millions of lives depend on my current mission, so I need someone who can monitor him until he's back at the temple.
Obi,
if Het is around, take him with you. Don't underestimate Anakin. Don't provoke him, and don't leave him alone with Senator Amidala. Oh, and don't touch his belongings. You won't like what you find.
How did you know this already?
Obi-Wan has a reply on the tip of his tongue. He doesn't utter a word of it, his brain registering exactly what Quinlan said. Quinlan knows about the Tusken tribe.
He shouldn't. No one should at this stage. Obi-Wan only found out a few years into his exile.
There is no better explanation. Quinlan must have been sent back too. Obi-Wan decides to risk it.
Time travel.
Jango makes a noise akin to an Awiya in the throes of agony, and glares at Obi-Wan with the might of... something not very impressive. Obi-Wan has dealt with the man for years. His frown and his handsome face won't move him. Quinlan's sputtering is more interesting, as are his next words.
When did you come back?
Obi-Wan's heartbeat is fast, his grin bright. Something pulls at his chest and he realizes it's joy.
An hour?
He looks at Jango, who shrugs.
Maybe less. You?
The last time Skywalker walked in on us.
At Jango's curious blink, Obi-Wan summons the first object he sees, the gross sponge on the kitchen counter, and force throws it in his face. Jango dodges, picks it up, and throws it back. But the Force is with Obi-Wan and spares him. And deep down, all Obi-Wan thinks about is that if Quinlan came back, Obi-Wan doesn't have to mourn the man he used to know. He's here with them. One rare survivor of Order 66 who, despite the risks, the darkness, the hopelessness, still ferried younglings away from the Empire. Still remained the kind of Jedi his master would be proud of. Obi-Wan hasn't had many occasions to be filled with so much glee in the past 2 decades, while he still lived. He can count them on one hand. Hugging Leia, meeting Luke, and... later, training him, however briefly. Hearing that Quinlan was alive, that the Jedi weren't gone. Seeing Qui-Gon again. Now he's determined to feel this joy as often as possible, and Quinlan can help. He leans forward, amused at the memory conjured by Quinlan's words.
When was that? Jango asks, eyeing the sponge warily. 3 weeks ago. Hey, is that Cody?
Obi-Wan sighs.
I understand why you would assume that.
Why is Cody your first guess?
Django looks a little grumpy. It's entertaining. Endearing, perhaps, because Django doesn't take it as an insult. Like he would have without years of soul-searching in the great beyond. He's just a little possessive of Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan isn't blind, thank you very much. He's had 4 years to understand why Django's ghost was sticking around, and 4 years to accept why he liked it. Obi-Wan can picture Quinlan's careless shrug, the way he's probably walking back to his ship with a confident stride. In the background, he hears the sound of a busy street, a market. He can't remember what Quinlan's mission is.
Why wouldn't it be?
A merchant yelling about fresh fish nearly drowns Quinlan's voice.
Why indeed, Django replies. It's Fett. Charmed, I'm sure. Why Yoda would pick you of all people.
Quinn, Obi-Wan interrupts. They have more important things to deal with, even if it is funny. Did you change something yet?
Tried not to, but it's hard to tell.
Quinlan pauses, talks to someone, and asks Obi-Wan to wait, which he does, wringing his inner sleeves in a fruitless attempt to dry them. The hiss of an airlock and the clang of a heavy bag dropped to the floor follow.
Okay, Quinlan exhales. Getting the ship ready. I'll calm Het when we're done. Did anyone else come back?
Django wants to know, which is a fair question.
I don't know. Nothing when I touched Yoda's shoulder, and I'm guessing he sent you back?
Obi-Wan confirms it and ignores Django's baffled expression. It's not like they talked a lot about Force abilities, and what they spoke about did not include psychometry. Their afterlife was mostly made up of observing the living and drifting into nothingness in between, which built a strong bond, but was not enough to educate Django on what the Force could do. Django was initially annoyed at being pulled out of wherever his spirit was to keep Obi-Wan company. But he didn't have many questions. He accepted things as they were, because he was dead. Django opens his mouth, perhaps to ask more about it, then changes his mind and his face settles like it does when he accepts something odd. The Django Obi-Wan met in his first life had a fantastic Sabacc face. But now that he knows him, Obi-Wan can read him like an open, flimsy book, Force or no Force.
How long have you known Obi-Wan, Fett?
A few years.
And he strikes you as a man who follows strictly established plans?
He was a high general.
Obi-Wan has a sudden flash of being tied up with Dooku and Anakin. Of flirting outrageously with Ventress. Of jumping into a sea of battle droids. Of hello there. And another happy landing. And of course I know him, he's me.
Red is not my color.
And we crushed the ship your way.
Quinlan is worse than he is, of course. But Obi-Wan is far from what Django seems to believe.
You missed quite the show before your ghost regained consciousness, my dear, he tells him, seeing the spark of interest in Django's eyes.
It must have been a sight. I'm sorry you couldn't watch.
Quinlan barks a laugh and adds,
Obi was raised by the most chaotic man in the galaxy. He's friends with Onaka. Make of that what you will.
In my defense, Obi-Wan says, plans tend to fall apart and force me to improvise. And speaking of plans, why don't we discuss our next steps?
Said next steps are in motion before nightfall. Quinlan sends an update after meeting with Asharad Het. With Obi-Wan still on Kamino and no urgent comms sent out, Anakin has no reason to leave Tatooine so soon, beyond his history and his hatred of sand. But the Jedi are still heading there without delay. Obi-Wan, now wearing Jango's clothes, to Boba's astonishment, is pretending to inspect the command class. Desperate to hug the men he knew and loved, unable to do anything about it, he'll work to earn their trust. But if there is no war, their bond will never be the same.
Speaking to them in their own battle sign results in a mixed bag of reactions. Fox and Pons are worried, wondering how he knows. Well, Bakara is grudgingly impressed. To Cody's credit, he takes it all in stride and doesn't show the confusion he is absolutely feeling. The youth of these men is heartbreaking. Not yet burdened by so much trauma, their skin is unmarred, their eyes bright. They're eager to serve, to do what they were made for. But Obi-Wan doesn't find them naive in the slightest, because Kamino is a battleground, albeit of a different kind. And the commanders know that better than most. And so, Obi-Wan, the first Jedi they've ever met, takes great care as he informs them that, within the next few hours, they'll be taking the city. Obi-Wan puts his entire trust in Cody, who stands impossibly straighter and probably a little overwhelmed. And maybe Alpha 17 will be pissed that a CC is in charge on his own turf, but Jango had another job for him, and he's not here. Obi-Wan finds him where Jango said he'd be, focused on a computer console as he secures the tubies in an incubation room. Pill-shaped pods holding identical babies cover sky-high walls. Obi-Wan once passed through with Anakin and Shaak-Ti, and just like he did then, he presses a hand on the nearest pod, smiling at the little light inside and sending a pulse of love in the Force.
Camera loop and scrambler's operational, 17 declares, stepping away from the console. His Phase 1 helmet sits on a small table behind him. He's seemingly unbothered by Obi-Wan's presence or by Jango's orders. He didn't come back in time, but he's Alpha 17, so perhaps Obi-Wan shouldn't be surprised. As a calculating, highly adaptable, and competent bastard, he smells the change in the air. He's loyal to the Jedi, to the Republic. But, above all, he's loyal to his brothers. And now, a Jedi is showing up and supporting a plan to free them. Obi-Wan doesn't foresee any problem coming from him.
Thank you, Obi-Wan says, almost slipping and calling him 17, but catching himself just in time.
How long until they notice?
Long enough. 17 reloads his blaster rifle.
You should wear armor, Jedi.
The Force shields me.
It's your funeral.
17 wasn't impressed in their first lives, and he's not impressed now. Obi-Wan loves him for it.
Don't you have somewhere to be?
17 asks. Obi-Wan grins. In his past, they only worked together for a short time before 17's wounds forced him to go back to being a trainer. But Obi-Wan never forgot the bonds they built. Hearing him talk like this warms his heart.
I see no better place to be but right here, protecting those who cannot flee. Unless you have a better idea.
At this stage, without having met a Jedi before, 17 must still think their supposed buyers consider them disposable. He peers at Obi-Wan's face, seeking a hint of deception.
Why?
Why do I wish to protect children?
They're products, 17 says, showing no emotion, but Obi-Wan knows what he's doing.
They have not, and will never be, products.
No matter what anyone says, Obi-Wan replies with steel in his voice.
They're living beings. A Jedi must protect and cherish all life forms to the best of their ability. That includes you and your brothers. You are sentient. You are people. And you have as much value as anyone else in the universe.
He takes no joy in destabilizing 17 over this particular topic, but it's necessary. Something flickers in 17's eyes. Obi-Wan telegraphs his movements before placing a hand on his armored wrist.
There's more to the story than a Jedi commissioning an army. I will explain and answer your questions, but first,
We should keep going. What are the biggest threat to the babies? And how do we prevent them? It takes 2 hours to disable what 17 calls the purging protocols, and Obi-Wan desperately needs to meditate. He should have expected a mechanism to be included in each pod, and it's only because he has decades of experience dealing with the horrors of the galaxy that he keeps his composure. He distracts himself by providing quick explanations to 17 when prompted. He trusts him, but sees no reason to reveal names yet. 17 doesn't ask, either. He mulls over the information, and when Obi-Wan mentions the chips, his shell cracks.
"We need slicers," 17 growls, punching a code on his comm unit. "Does Prime know?"
"He didn't until my arrival." It's Obi-Wan's first lie. 17 barks into the comm, hangs up, and smirks.
"Ready to meet the biggest assholes in Topeka City?"
"I thought I already did." 17 looks Obi-Wan in the eye, and his mouth twitches. Obi-Wan projects an air of innocence and waits for Cal Skirata and his boys. While Prudy Skirata digs into the most secure files on the internal server, Obi-Wan calls Jango for updates and makes a list. He likes lists. They helped navigate the challenges of meditation when he was a child, too excitable and bouncy to sit still for that long. He'd walk around the room of 1,000 fountains with a datapad, cataloging rocks and herbs and trees. Not properly. He still remembers vividly calling a Lothal fern the leaf with the ugly squiggles. But it worked. During the war, he'd sometimes take over an administrative task if it involved an inventory of sorts, when stress and grief drove him too close to the edge. Today's list is a wonderful distraction from the angry buzzing in the Force and from Kyle Skirata's irritating pacing. Item. Jango accepted his title as Mandalore, which blindsided Obi-Wan, who did not know he was planning it. They need to talk. Item. He got rid of the Death Watch trainers and any others who could not be trusted. Obi-Wan doesn't want to know how. Item. The Kaminoan scientists are locked in one room with no access to comms and no weapon. Item. All outgoing connectivity is off. There is no holonet access, no comm beyond the city limits, no way for anyone to alert Dooku or Palpatine unless they make their way to a private ship. The Alphas and 100 ARC troopers guard the hangars. Item. The droids are powered down or hacked. Item. The trainers are researching planets because Kamino can't be the clone's home. Once the Kaminoan government finds out what's happening, there is no telling what they will do. Most trainers don't care much, yet. They didn't have years to examine their mistakes, and they still see their charges as lesser beings. They go along with it because they're following their leader. Item. The Tubies are secure. Obi-Wan skips to the next page and adds what remains. Item. Neutralize the chips. Item. Handle Lama Su. Item. Check Nalase's secret lab. Item. Contact the council. Item. Get an update from Quinlan. Item. Get rid of Palpatine. Item. Prevent the war. Item. Move the clones to their new world once found. Item. Stop the clones' accelerated aging. Item. Handle Anakin. Item. Warn the council about the other Jedi who fell. Look for early hints. Item. secure citizenship for the clones. Unwilling to disturb Perudi as he hijacks the facility's central command, Obi-Wan settles for Jiang, remaining close enough to Cal to prevent an aggressive reaction. Nala Se is keeping experimental clones in a secret lab, he announces, knowing pleasantries won't be appreciated. Cal's gaze sharpens. 99 should know how to get there.
We'll get them out.
Cal replies with barely concealed fury. Jiang looks uneasy.
How many?
I'm not sure. At least 4 with different mutations.
Obi-Wan only knows Clone Force 99 from their joint mission on Anaxes. So when Jiang returns with a little girl in tow, he is both stunned and crushed by guilt. She was there the whole time, in both lifetimes, alone, and he never knew. She's Boba's age and shares his face, but none of his grumpiness. She enthusiastically gives them Nala Se's access codes and clings to Obi-Wan. She's fascinated by the Force, and immediately peppers him with questions, to her brother's consternation. It's a pleasant change from the wariness everyone is feeling around Obi-Wan. He indulges her, demonstrating tricks, basking in her childish joy. Such a bright spot. Too bright, maybe, for a Force null. Which she is not. Interesting. It's late at night when Obi-Wan follows Jango to a cargo ship. Omega holding his hand and Boba glaring at them. Omega doesn't seem to mind. She's very cheerful considering her history, and once Boba understands that she's not a threat to his father's love for him, he'll probably like her. Obi-Wan only took her with him once she revealed she'd met none of the clones who still live. And he refuses to contemplate what this means. What she assisted Nala Se with. She'll need to talk about it, eventually. Obi-Wan will find her the help she deserves, and in the meantime, he'll keep her close, because she feels safe with him. Jango still radiates shock once the kids are in bed. In the lounge, he rubs his face, and it's jarring to see him so exhausted. Because it reminds Obi-Wan of Cody after he read through casualty reports. But that Cody doesn't exist. Criff, now Obi-Wan is depressed again. Jango exhales loudly, hands now flat on the table.
I didn't know.
Nala Se made sure of it, says Obi-Wan, bringing him a cup of calf. The calf machine is better on the ship than in the apartment. But there's no tea, so he abstains from drinking.
Your Force should have dumped us here with our past selves. I'd shoot mine.
I'm rather glad to avoid a messy situation myself. He looks around. Whose ship is this? It's not the Slave One. Obi-Wan doesn't recognize it.
Turvo's. She'll take mine to leave this place. There's not enough space for 4 people.
In that case, may I use the ship's comm? Jango waves him towards the cockpit, and a few minutes later, Obi-Wan's call connects.
We're meeting the Council on Jedha,
are Quinlan's first words.
Obi-Wan hums in approval.
It'll keep Anakin away from Coruscant.
When? A week. Skywalker needs a Bacta tank first.
A weight settles in Obi-Wan's stomach.
What happened? He didn't come quietly once he realized what we knew. Bled his crystal during the fight. But I think he didn't mean to. It shocked him enough to give Het an opening. So I'm afraid he'll be getting prosthetics regardless of Dooku's involvement.
Quinlan's tone suggests he's not exactly sorry about it.
Obi, he's grieving so intensely. He's so angry. If he doesn't accept help, I think...
Quinlan exhales, defeated.
What I mean is,
Vader isn't far. Closer than he was last time. Obi-Wan pictures his Padawan's yellow eyes on a face still framed by his thin braid. It's hard to tell if they made things worse. Faster, yes, but worse? Perhaps not. One detail sticks out in Quinlan's story. You said he was in shock. How did he feel? Not as dark anymore. I suspect he realized he went too far. But his hands were already gone. It went so fast. I'm sorry. Asherad made a split-second decision, and there was no going back. Don't apologize. If Anakin comes back, if he lets himself heal, and if Palpatine no longer pumps him full of venom, he'll understand why he had to be stopped. Tell Asherad I would have done the same, would you? Because I did. You'll tell him yourself. A beat of silence follows. Obi-Wan watches the vast hangar through the window, thinks of the army boarding transport in neat ranks, marching to their death, and shakes himself out of it. Jango and I are looking for a safe place for the clones. Any idea?
That depends. What's the timing? I should be asking you that. I'm working on the chips, but we need to kill Sidious and Dooku quickly before they do something unexpected. And we can't incriminate the Order.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan's eyes narrow, staring at the comm. Quinn?
Yeah?
What did you do?
Got an entire data packet ready to be unleashed on the Holonet? It's enough to destroy their reputation and reveal their plans, so we should avoid most of the blame, assuming we get rid of them in the next few days. The men will be safe on Alderaan. Bail owes me a favor. Quinlan had always been efficient. Obi-Wan releases the tension in his shoulders and ends the call after asking about Padme. On her way back to Naboo, on Asherad's ship, and hopefully educating herself about Tatooine natives. He then goes to find Jango and tells him everything. Jango listens, before leaning back against the wall.
And now?
Now I'm using your shower, and we're negotiating to bring enough Venators into orbit for an evac.
Jango looks him up and down. We're alive.
We are.
I could join you.
A flare of interest sparks through his body.
You could. Boba and Omega are asleep. The Force?
The Force. Obi-Wan gives him his best, mysterious and vaguely amused expression, and Jango drags him to the fresher. Having a body again is marvelous. A few days pass, and the Force provides. Parudi disables the chips. They'll be removed eventually, but the most pressing concern on that side of the galaxy is now gone. Still a little confused, Cody takes charge of the evacuation once the Star Destroyers arrive. The negotiations were easier than expected. After all, the ships were already paid for. They'll head for Tenu to establish a temporary base. With that worry gone, Obi-Wan witnesses Jango's apologies to the clones he has wronged, and the Mandalorians he abandoned. And while it won't heal every hurt, it's a start. The man's schedule is now overrun with revenge spars against the Alphas, and Obi-Wan can't blame any of them. As expected, Boba's feelings about Omega change fast, and he tries to teach her Mandoa with a significant amount of patience, that makes Jango glow with pride. Jango, with his dignity back and his heart in the right place, is unbelievably attractive. Which is very inconvenient when both he and Obi-Wan are so busy. They steal a few moments between comm calls and meetings. Quick and dirty and exactly what they crave, and it's not enough. But it has to be. They're ready to leave Kamino when news of Palpatine's death reaches them, on the bridge of what would become the Negotiator,
later. Or before. Commander Fox interrupts Django's rant about the quality of a ration bar, handing him a data pad with a little too much enthusiasm, aka slamming it in his hand hard enough to make Django wince.
Something you'll want to see, Prime!
No, sir, for him. Obi-Wan, however, gets a nod and a salute.
General.
Fox doesn't wait for permission before turning away and leaving. Obi-Wan, grateful for any hint of insubordination, showing that the clones are fighting against their conditioning, merely smiles. His smile drops when he reads over Jango's shoulder. Bewildered, he learns about the messy murder of the Chancellor by an unknown attacker, and how the Republic is mourning such a kind, generous, and wise old man. It's not ideal.
He would hate that, Django points out, being remembered as a benevolent grandpa.
It won't last, Obi-Wan replies, thinking of Quinlan's data packet.
Are we going to Tenu or Alderaan then, sir?
That's Wolf, who has been eavesdropping with the discretion of a bantha in an antique shop. Obi-Wan rubs his beard, asking the Force for guidance and sensing a strong nudge to keep to their plan.
Tenu. Dooku is still a threat. We're not taking any chances.
Let the Republic sort out their mess with the CIS first, Django adds.
Someone else? Waxer, whose Force presence sends a pang of hurt straight through Obi-Wan's heart, pipes up from a nearby console.
Sirs, Count Dooku is dead.
Django's eyes meet Obi-Wan's.
Obi-Wan snatches the pad away from him and checks the news.
Barely a minute ago, an emergency broadcast in Serenian space announced the Count's death as he returned home from a business trip to Geonosis. His fate mirrors the Chancellor's in every way. Obi-Wan, Quinlan, and Django share the same worry as they talk to each other on a secure holo later. Who else came back with them? Palpatine and Dooku's dirty laundry is aired for the galaxy to see by the time the clones are granted asylum on Tenu the next Zelday. On Bendu Day, Obi-Wan secures a treaty between the locals and the bewildered AgriCorps to help the sudden population increase. And on Prime Day, he kisses Jango in front of a disgusted Boba and takes his fighter to Jeddah. It takes all of his willpower and training to keep his tears at bay when he meets the Council. And he hugs Mace, Plo, and Shaak-Ti before remembering that in this time, they're not that close yet.
You and Voss have broken too many shatter points, Mace states in visible pain. Please tell me you had nothing to do with the murders.
Obi-Wan raises both eyebrows. Did Quinlan imply we did? Behind him, Quinlan gasps.
I did not.
Not in so many words,
Plo replies, claws hidden in his sleeves.
The timing is rather suspicious, don't you think?
Agen says.
When did you discover Palpatine's true identity?
It's a long story. Quinlan crosses his arms over his chest.
And it's not pretty.
Does it explain how you caught Anakin when your mission had nothing to do with him or his location?
Yes, Master Coon. And will it tell us why you,
Mace stares at Obi-Wan,
formed an alliance with Tenu? Stole an army and found a lost Mandalorian leader?
I'm afraid so.
Force. We'll be here a while, won't we?
That we will, Masters.
Night falls on the sands of Jeddah when Obi-Wan's sixth visit to his recovering Padawan ends. Anakin is no longer a Jedi. But the Vader, lurking in the shadows of his mind, is far enough to give Obi-Wan hope. He has taken the first steps on the arduous path
to find the light again. With enough support, enough strength and will, he can still become a good man if he chooses to be. He isn't too far gone. He recovered last time, and he did so fast enough to conceal the stain from even his own master, even if he hadn't bled his crystal then, and fell again a few years later. Obi-Wan keeps his Padawan's braid in the box that once held Qui-Gon's Riverstone. As he walks down the steps of the Temple of the Kyber, he finds Quinlan, whose Force presence has grown more peaceful in the few days they've spent together.
"I'm returning to Coruscant," Quinlan says. "I have a former Padawan and a master to hug. Are you coming?"
Obi-Wan smiles and thinks of his home, safe and full of light and contentment. But that home is tainted by memories that even death couldn't erase. And he thinks of Tenu, and of the future settlement on Alderaan, of Mandalore, and what's to come. He thinks of the confined space of a ship and the heat of Jango's body, and he thinks of Omega's potential and of the other clones who might be Force-sensitive. And he shakes his head. "I'm needed elsewhere."
"Please tell me you're not leaving the Order."
Obi-Wan shudders at the thought.
"Never."
The Order is his family, the code, his way of life. Leaving would shatter him. Leave him in a state not unlike how he was on Tatooine.
"Good. They'll still give you a council seat, you know."
"If it's the will of the Force. For now, I must be with my men."
"I figured you'd say that."
Quinlan pats him on the back, and Obi-Wan pulls him into a hug, startling a laugh out of him.
"I'll drop by. See how Commander Faye is doing. Keep you out of trouble. We could meet here, too. Visit Anakin sometimes, until he decides if he wants to stay here or not. He'll need us. And Ayla will come."
"I'd be delighted." Obi-Wan lands at the main clone settlement, attracting a small crowd which includes a delighted Omega, holding Boba's arm and jumping up and down.
"Jedi," says Alpha 17.
Obi-Wan beams at him.
"17, did you miss me?" "In your dreams."
He twists on his heels and disappears between the trees.
"He came here to wait for you when you got out of hyperspace,"
Boba says, rolling his eyes. Obi-Wan offers hugs, arms wide open, and Omega rushes to his side, her presence sparkling. Boba hesitates, but ends up following her example, grumbling about it, but clinging just as hard.
"Where's your dad?" Obi-Wan asks, ruffling Boba's hair.
"Dunno. Did you bring us something? Dad always does when he goes away."
"I did."
He has a bag of specialty candy so big it takes up most of the space aboard his ship.
"You'll have to share with your siblings."
Boba's eyes widen in horror.
"All of them?"
Omega giggles, and Obi-Wan lets out a surprised laugh.
"Of course not.
There's enough for the younger cadets in this settlement. He'll ask Jango to place an order for everyone later. Jango has money, and he owes them that much, and more."
"I need to talk to him. You'll get your candy after dinner."
Boba tries to convince him otherwise.
It doesn't work. Following the Force, Obi-Wan heads to the Venator the clones are using as lodging. The settlement is in its infancy, and no one has a roof over their head yet, so they found very large empty areas to land the ships. There's another one on the other side of the island, holding the incubation chambers, surgical suites, and the lab that the Medicorps will soon use to research a way to stop the men's accelerated aging. Jango is pacing on the lower levels of the ship. His presence lights up when he spots Obi-Wan, but his face doesn't betray much. Obi-Wan doesn't run, but it's a near thing. He pulls him close and kisses him like he hasn't seen him in years, reveling in the feel of Jango's fingers in his hair.
"Well, hello, dear," Obi-Wan whispers against his lips.
What are you doing hiding in here?
You won't like it,
Jango warns him, stepping back and gesturing at the nearest door.
Curious, Obi-Wan looks for a hint in the Force, but while he can sense someone between these walls, they're oddly blank.
Feel anything? Jango asks.
Yes, but they're hiding?
Obi-Wan frowns.
Or suppressed. Are you keeping a Jedi captive?
Jango sighs and opens the door. Obi-Wan steps inside.
What in the name of the Force?
Maul's eyes snap open, intense as always, but not bright yellow. They're not the eyes of a Sith. Softer, golden, lacking the sickly light Obi-Wan once knew.
Kenobi.
Maul's lips curl in distaste, not hatred.
I must say I'm at a loss,
Obi-Wan states. He doesn't fear Maul, doesn't hate him either, not anymore. He gave him an honorable death once, held him as he took his last breath, and it meant something.
Jango, however, is not taking chances. Maul is sitting comfortably, but he is cuffed, which is just good sense in Obi-Wan's opinion.
Jango squeezes his shoulder.
He found us 2 days ago, looking for you.
Told me to show you his lightsaber.
When you put it like that, I'm not sure I want to, darling.
Maul exhales loudly, exasperated.
You are an insufferable creature.
He glances at Jango.
What color are my blades?
White, whatever that means.
Obi-Wan stares,
and stares a little more,
and everything falls into place.
You came back too. You killed Palpatine and Dooku. And saved my brothers. And gave Voss his intel. Not that he knows it was me. You're welcome.
You came here to, what, say hello?
Maul seems to ponder before answering.
Yes.
He holds out his hands.
These cuffs are a true eyesore. You will remove them.
Out of every possible insane thing he has ever seen, this is the one that makes Obi-Wan believe, for a moment, that he has gone mad. Jango probably gets the same impression when Obi-Wan tells him to let Maul go. As the former Sith leaves the planet, Obi-Wan spares a thought to Qui-Gon, who, much like Obi-Wan himself, might be watching everything from the beyond. Gossiping about Obi-Wan's actions with old friends. Obi-Wan shares his suspicions with Jango. Which is why Jango, sweaty legs tangled with Obi-Wan's in the privacy of the Slave One later that night, raises a fist in the air and uncurls his middle finger. Obi-Wan laughs until his ribs ache.
The end.